tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everyone, welcome to another edition of The Warm Down today. Delighted to be joined by my mate, Jermaine McGilvray, one of the very best wingers in rugby league and one of England's best players as well. And we're going to get into that in a little bit later, but we're going to probably be talking about United and Liverpool, which is why I've asked you on now rather than at the end of the fucking season. But we are brought to you guys by The Athletic, as always. And if you'd like to get into some real good football journalism, then hit the link in the description. It is the new home of football writing. That is theathletic.co.uk/Howson, theathletic.co.uk/Howson. You've been giving me shit all year for Liverpool.
Nah, you know what? I'm really humble about it. I am. But I've suffered.
Do I have to dig these tactics?
I've suffered years and years, decades of, you know, of hurt with Liverpool not being the greatest, and, you know, watching the likes of Arsenal and Man United, then Chelsea in the early 2000s just, you know, winning the league title, and everyone saying, oh, it's been 20 years, it's been 30 years since Liverpool last won a league title. But
you're 31, right?
Yeah, 31.
So you've never seen
it? No, never seen it. You know, my earliest memory was probably John Barnes back in the day when, before I even really liked football, just my uncles watching it. And that's how I got into supporting Liverpool. I didn't even really like football, but if anyone asked me, what team do you follow? I used to always say Liverpool, just because my uncle supported him, and as I've grown old and, you know, started enjoying football, I've just loved Liverpool. Can't say I'm a diehard fan because I don't go to enough games, but, you know, I watch them all the time. You know, if Liverpool lose, that's my weekend done. I honestly hate seeing Liverpool do bad, but, you know, to see what they've been doing in recent years and what they're doing now, you know, it's just a big smile on my face, and, you know, all the haters are coming out, and, you know, saying all this about VAR.
We're getting into that, don't you worry about the VAR. We are definitely getting into VAR.
You know, I'm just over the moon now, how successful they are, and, you know, I'm really happy.
How do you fit in going to the match then, around playing?
It's hard. I don't go to many games. Like I say, I watch most of the time on TV, so I can't call myself a diehard fan, but, you know, I do love Liverpool, and, you know, I try to get my kids to support them, but they don't. But, you know, most of my family do, like my mum, my uncle, and stuff like that. But, you know, I watch it all the time. I always see the results. You know, I live in Yorkshire as well, so it's a bit difficult travelling, and, you know, I've got three kids, so it's really hard. But, you know, I won't say I'm a diehard, but I'm the next best thing.
But Magic Weekend this year, played at Anfield.
Yeah.
Did you score as well?
Scored two at the cop end as well.
What, dreams I can't share of. Your joy. I'll say well done.
You know, it's what dreams are made of. I made my debut at Anfield playing for England in the Test Series last 2017 against New Zealand. We beat them then. I didn't manage to score, but I made my debut for Huddersfield at Anfield as well last season, and we beat Hull FC, I think it was 52-2, and I got to score two in the cup end, so that was sensational.
Right, VAR then.
You know where it is. There's a lot of haters now because Liverpool are doing well, and, you know, they've had a few decisions go their way. But
a few decisions?
Well, it don't matter how many decisions have gone their way, not one of them have been wrong. You know what this kind of reminds me of? It reminds me of Fergie time back in the day when, Man United used to be on the back foot, you know, scrape a 1-1, and it used to go into the 90th minute. Then it'd be like 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah, but both teams are allowed to score.
From nowhere, and then they just get some nasty free kick. Then they'd score last-minute goal. But I used to say they were cheating and this and that, but I understand now. It was just hatred. Hatred because we were so poor, but now we're doing so good. And it seems everything's going in our favour at the moment. Everyone's just hating, and I get that because I used to be that guy, so I just say it's not
cheating. Fergie time, both teams get a chance to score. Yeah. VAR is literally wiping off or giving goals.
You tell me which decision's being wrong in the VAR decisions involving Liverpool.
The handball which against City, for starters.
Which handball? So what happened before it hit the Trent's hand? It hit City's hand first, then it hit his. So it would. So if we're gonna go like that, we'd have brought it back and it'd been a free kick to Liverpool because it hit his hand before. I think it was it might have been Bernardo Silva's hand. I think it hit his hand first in the same build up. Then about seconds later, it did hit Trent's hand, but should have been our free kick then.
I haven't done a list. I should have done a list. There's loads, but let me get this out. So Lucas Brud is the IFAB. That's like the FA for the entire world.
Yeah.
They're the ones who put the rules for football, for FIFA, essentially. General Secretary, talking about the Premier League use of VAR. He says, clear and obvious still remains. It's an important principle. There should not be a lot of... I think this is massive, actually. There should not be a lot of time spent to find something marginal. This is what's pissing me off with the offsides at the moment, where you... How important... Cody said it yesterday, didn't he? Mm. Armpits have just become well important. Yeah, when did anyone ever score with an armpit?
Yeah, I agree. There's been a couple of Liverpool goals that have been turned down for the same thing. I think it should be your foot. I think it should be your planted foot, me, personally. Because your armpit, your shoulder... And I know you could score in that way, but it's very rare. Mm. And it shouldn't be like that. But these marginal ones... Like yesterday, I reckon if... The Wolves goal against Liverpool, that really and truly, that was a goal
he's
for
onside,
me.
Isn't
yeah, it was a goal for me. But
the Pookie one for Norwich.
But the thing is, they are being consistent in these little things, though, which you can't say, oh, Liverpool got away with it, because Liverpool have been denied goals for this exact same thing, and other teams have as well. So they are being consistent in doing a rubbish job at not giving these tight decisions.
The not this Liverpool specific one, but the foul on David De Gea against I think it was the Everton game, not given, but the foul on the Brighton goalkeeper by one of the Villa strikers, exactly the same, given. That's where I don't get. There's no consistency.
Yeah.
This geezer saying, if something's not clear on the first sight, then it's not obvious and it shouldn't be considered. Looking at one camera angle is one thing, but looking at 15, trying to find something that's potentially not there, was not the idea of the VAR principle. It should be clear and obvious. I think that's massive. Obviously, coming from a rugby league background, you do get all of that as the ball being grounded, and all that sort of stuff. But that kind of makes sense. And one of my issues with VAR coming into football in the first place was how I thought, in rugby league, referees had completely bottled the decisions that they would normally just give, and they always want to check. And you're like, why are you checking? Just give it.
The system in rugby league, it's different in Australia to it is in England, whereas I think they brought in now where they actually say that I'm giving a try.
Oh, they give the on-field decision, don't they?
So it wasn't like that before, but now they brought in, I'm giving a try, can you check upstairs, where in football... It's just completely, they've give it to upstairs. And, I don't know if it works in football. It's different for me. I don't enjoy seeing it. And you wait and you can't celebrate. Whereas rugby, it's like, ever since I've been involved with rugby, it's been a thing. And it's just coming to football now. And it does take a little bit some out of the game for me. So I don't know what, they definitely need to fix on it. I don't know if they should get rid of it, but maybe make it the foot, maybe... They've got 10 seconds maximum or something like that.
Like a play clock.
Yeah.
You can't decide in 10 seconds. Yeah. Referees, original decision.
Yeah, exactly. But the referee needs to make a decision and then send it upstairs or wherever they make the decisions. But it has taken a bit out of the game, especially with the fans and stuff. They don't know whether to celebrate a goal or not. Do you wait? Whereas rugby league, we know what's coming. We know what's happening. It's been a part of rugby league since I can remember it anyway. But it is a bit strange in football. But I would say they are consistent in doing these, making these decisions, these tight marginal decisions.
When they're doing, when it's like, when you go in, oh, there's literally a centimetre and he's offside. He's not offside, is he?
No, you should, if you have to debate like that, you should always go with the attacker for me. Because you have to reward attacking football. That's what the people have come to pay their money for.
Or do we make it daylight? Because it used to be a thing with daylight.
Yeah, it did. I don't know where they go from here, but, it's got everyone talking about it, and it's not really a good thing either. For being a Liverpool fan, it's been good. I know people like to say, oh, we've won our games off it, but, all decisions have been correct, whether they've turned down our goals or they've given more, they've disallowed the opponent's goals. It's been good. It's been really good for us.
I might have to make that list. Right. Klopp's obviously in his fourth season, essentially. The 2015.
It came halfway through, and then Brendan Rodgers got sacked.
Has it been a smooth ride, do you think?
No, it hasn't. And it never was going to, especially when he started off. He needed to obviously make his impact on the team. He needed his philosophy to go to the team, and the players who couldn't handle his philosophy, they had to go. And, you know, he brought the players in that he knew could do the work. And now you're basically seeing the rewards of what he's done over the last couple of years. And, you know, it's outstanding what team has got and the balance he's got as well. And the strength and depth, what we never used to have. You know, back in the day, I remember we used to always have like a decent enough starting 11, but as soon as someone got injured, like maybe a Gerrard or someone like that, or Torres or Suarez, we're kind of finished. But now, even Origi, he's not, you wouldn't say he's an absolute superstar.
No, he's got impact though, isn't
he? Yeah, he comes on, he'll bag you them 2-3 goals. You know, you'll start him down again, he'll get you them goals, which is... It's very, very rare for me, for Liverpool, and for me to say, like, looking back in the day, we'd always have that perfect striker, but like, say, like a Torres, and if he got injured, we had nobody's playing. But, you know, now it seems like we've got that perfect balance and the perfect team.
I think your recruitment, there was obviously a few things changed. The identification of Klopp felt different to the identification of, like, Hodgson and Dalglish. It felt like, and that did coincide with the change in the ownership structure, didn't it, behind the scenes?
Yeah, and that's what I kind of see with United now. I don't believe it's obviously the coach. Ollie seems like a great coach. It's like these people, they're just buying the best players and thinking they're going to gel into a good team. You need to get the players for the coach's philosophy. Yeah. You know, if they don't fit in the philosophy, don't matter who they are, they could be the best players in the world. They won't fit in that system, and if they don't fit in the system, you know, you're always going to struggle. But I think it's kind of turning a corner now. I'm liking how he's playing all them the young players, Ole, and you know, one that stands out for me is Mason Greenwood. Absolutely sensational. Because I've got like all the, I love watching football, so I've got like Chelsea TV, Liverpool TV, Man United TV.
I don't think I could watch the opposition sort of like.
No, but it's like I more watch it for like, say, like the young kids, like the under 19s, they're playing Champions League football against like, say, like Napoli and stuff like that. Yeah. I like watching who's coming through and stuff like that. Even like, I don't know if it's on no more, was it called the Victory Shield, where like England under 15s would play like Northern Ireland, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales.
Yeah, it's a schoolboy, isn't it?
Yeah, your schoolboy. So I used to watch that, like when like Loftus Cheek and everyone were playing. Ojo, who's at Liverpool. I just love watching like sports, and you know, I've got them channels as well. But I'm watching Mason Greenwood about maybe a year, two years ago, and he scored an absolute screamer with his left. Then he was like scored a nibble with his right. I'm like,
Newcastle, by any chance?
I don't know what team it was against, but I said, this kid is a freak. I said, he's going to be class him. And obviously, he's like through the like couple of years now, and he's in the first team and he's doing the same things. He's absolutely an amazing player, and you know, it's a pleasure to watch that. I believe he's going to be the next superstar.
His goals per minute in the first team are not that different from his goals per minute in the academy. And obviously, he did finish with more goals than games and half as many assists as games as well in his academy career. Jesus, if he even brings 70% of that into the first team, you've got an absolute gunman, haven't you?
I believe he will. I think he's going to be the next English superstar myself, from seeing what he was doing back then, and he's still doing it now. And even in the first team, where it's a whole different ball game to academy football, and he's still doing it now.
I think he ends up as a 9. I think he's going to grow into his frame. By the time he's 24, I think he'll be a right big fucker, because I think he's got a big frame to grow into.
Yeah, he has.
I think he's going to learn his trade on the right, and maybe possibly even playing off someone as well, I think, in the middle.
Yeah, that's what I thought, like more of a centre attacking midfielder for me, because he's got everything. You know, he could create, he could dribble.
Oh, his passing's outrageous, isn't it?
He could shoot off both feet. So I'm thinking, like, you're probably wasting him if you put him like as a striker. He needs to be, you know, let loose, like just running freely for me, really.
The Athletic have just got a piece out yesterday, actually, which is worth going checking out. I'll throw a link to this in the description. Talking about Brandon Williams. And I think he's another one, obviously, that's come through. More of a surprise, I think, Brandon. I always rated Brandon.
The left back.
Yeah, but I think his adaptation to first team football has been flawless. I think he's absolutely took it. And in total contrast to Mason, who's very in control and very classy, I think Brandon might volley you. I think he'd actually fight you if you're up for it. But I think him coming through, I think he's probably the closest one, even though Mason's ability, is legitimately world class, or at least potentially world class. I think Brandon's the one that could steal a first team spot first, just because of the competition at his spot.
Yeah, I think he's probably cemented that left back spot for me. You know, he's really tough. It seems like a no nonsense type of player as well. You know, he works really hard, and I think whatever spot you're playing, you need them type of players. You know, just going back to Liverpool, like they say, oh, Almane is killing it. Salah had a good season. You know, he comes in and out. Trent's smashing it, but I believe you need your players like Firmino, you need your Hendersons, Wijnaldums, them players what probably not easy on the eye all the time, you know, especially for fans, but they're doing all the dirty work, they're mopping up, they're working hard to make them players shine and stuff like that. I reckon he's one of them players. He works really hard from what I've seen of him. He looks tough, no nonsense. He's aggressive. So, you know, I think they've been probably missing that. You know, I know they brought Luke Shaw a few years back from Southampton.
I think he's in sixth season.
But I reckon the injuries have like held him back a little bit. But he's still a class player. But I reckon this young kid, you know, coming through the academy, probably means probably that a bit more for him playing first team as well. So he's got that hunger in him. So, you know, why not go all the way?
When are Liverpool going to lose?
I don't know. Obviously, they're going to have to lose sometime, but they just remind me of that old school 90s United. Like, they're not playing the best sometimes, but
they're not even being that great this season.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but they're just getting these wins and they're just cleaning up. You know, it's amazing to see, and I never thought.
Apart from one team.
I never thought I'd see this, like growing up. Like, I used to get. All my friends used to laugh at me. All my friends used to have support Arsenal or Man United. They used to laugh at me all the time. We used to have them in school. Used to have them pencil toppers with the shirts, and used to have the name on the back. And like I used to have mine with like Gerrard and Owen and stuff like that. So the shit Liverpool are shit, you know. But we'd be like kind of like trying to scrape this. It was top three back then, trying to scrape the top three to get in the Champions League and stuff like that. Then we had them years when we was out of the Champions League. You know, we had some dead players like Bishkan and Bruno Cheru and players like that. I thought that's what United remind me of. Kind of not now, but maybe a year ago, year and a half ago.
I think even still now, I think there's a lot of the kind of fluff in there.
A bit, but they're turning a corner. And the thing with United, they've got a great academy as well. So and he seems to be playing him. He's putting the belief into him. They just need a couple of signings, you know, and get his philosophy over completely to the team. And they'll be, I don't know if they'll be back to where they were, but they'll be better than they have been anyway.
I think one of the criticisms of Ollie is that he's not that tactically flexible. And if you look at City and Liverpool, your tactics are very similar, very, very similar in every game because you're at the level where you can play your game. And United, I don't think, are anywhere close to being able to just turn up everywhere and play our game. I think we have to respect every opposition we come up against.
Yeah.
Because I think that we're nowhere near as good. And that's not an excuse for when you play the likes of Watford. And this is something I can't explain. But I think that's just football. I think that's just sport in a nutshell, really. You should be able to look at United team and look at Watford team and go, well, United should win. But that's not how football works, is it?
It's not how sport works at the end of the day. It's 11 men against 11 men. You know, one man might have cost 90 million, another might have cost 10, but that doesn't make you far superior. If that 10 million player pound player works his nuts off, it could like limit that 90 million pound player's ability. You know, they're there to be shot. The Man United, one of the biggest brands in the world, like with anything. So when Man United come to town, it's a big thing. Like, I bought a season ticket at Huddersfield Town. Obviously, I like to see them doing good. But when they was in the Premiership, my sons could come and watch and stuff. And when Man United come to town, that's a massive game. I know they haven't been successful in recent years, but they're still a massive like team. So I'm thinking that. So what are the opposition thinking? When Man United comes down, we want to roll these over. They might not be doing great, but this is our cup final. You know,
And that's a real thing as well. Isn't it? People do raise their games for bigger games.
Of course it is. And you see that, like, Man United will be going, like, drawn against Liverpool, beating City and like that. And then they'll go and they'll, like, lose to Newcastle or something like that. Because these players, it's a big scalp for them. And, you know, that's in sport in general. That's not just football. But Man United, like I said, Man United, if you could go anywhere in the world and not speak the language and you say Man United, they'll be like, yeah, we know
they're... Oh, they're not going to look at you like...
No, no, they won't say Man United. They know Man United. It's kind of like Liverpool. Liverpool are massive across the world as well. Like Barcelona, Real Madrid. But Man United are a massive scalp for any team and any player, really. So, obviously, you say Man United are going to Watford and stuff like that, but you have to realise that there's human beings at the end of the day and, you know, they want to beat Man United.
Unfortunately, and I'm well capable of it as well. I think that's one of the issues, because the team isn't anywhere close to being perfect, anywhere close to having the depth that you need in the Premier League, especially in December, which is just carnage how many games there is.
Yeah,
I think that you've got to expect, one, because of the young nature of the side, two, because of the average nature of a lot of our players, and three, the pile-up of fixtures. And because the squad's not thin, because the squad is thin even, you're playing people week in, week out when maybe they only play three out of four if you've got a full squad or and four. And I think that grinds you down over the course of a season. If we don't sign anyone in January, I am worried for where this season goes. And I think we've hit a bit of momentum at the minute. And I think if we went, boom, there's a new midfielder. Like, even it doesn't even have to be amazing. Just a Premier League standard midfielder would do us. And we went, boom, there's, I don't know, depth in another area. I think that momentum might carry us into the top four.
Yeah, but like I said, it's Man United. Just a Premier League standard midfielder, that don't quite cut it, really. That's probably why you're in the position where you are now.
Maybe. Just an extra man, so we don't have to just, like, play people
out. I reckon you either go out for a guy, for a superstar who's going to fit the way Ole or Man United want to play, or you just rely on the youth. For me, I reckon that's what Liverpool did all them years when they were garbage, you know, not garbage, but not finishing where they wanted to finish. They were getting the Akolanis and stuff like that, just these players just to fill up the team. But at the end of the day, they're not performing well, and it's hard to get rid of these players, and they'll be on decent coin as well.
I think United have got loads of those, like Phil Jones, people like that. You just think you're not ever going to start, and who's going to buy you?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you don't want to be stuck in that boat. But I think if United are serious and they want to catch like the likes of Liverpool and City, you know, Tottenham, you know, they're struggling a bit now, but they're kind of up there. They need to start, you know, signing real quality and trying to kick on now instead of signing players who probably won't fit the mould, so to speak. But like I said, Man United, they wouldn't struggle to sign anyone. Mm. But it's getting the right people in now, but I hope they do what you said and sign Premier League standard players, and they don't quite cut it.
Because I think as a midfielder, we could do with just a Premier League standard player that you know you're going to get.
Like who do you reckon?
Decore. Someone like a Decore probably would help us.
Some steel, you mean? Yeah. Do you mean some steel?
Yeah, I'm not saying just like, let's just fill the ranks with fluff, but like someone like a Decore, you know, clearly isn't world class, but there's a job I can see him doing, and you know, it gives someone else a night off.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, like about like Henderson and Milner and players like that. They do all that dirty work, mop everything up, and then it makes it, the likes of Mane and Salah, they shine off the back of it. But yeah, I could see that McTominay, he does a great job.
Yeah, I think we saw when Pogba did come on against Watford and the little cameo we got off him at, I think it was Newcastle when he came on. The little cameo that we got off him there, you saw, one, we realised how much we missed McTominay when he was injured.
Yeah.
Fred's really taken up a gear. But then when Pogba comes on, you see what someone who can actually pass it all over the park looks like. And you go, Jesus Christ, we've not had that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and even though the game was essentially dead when he came on against Newcastle, I think there was like little gentleman's agreement, like, all right, let's call it 4-1 and that'll do. You could still see that forward passing coming from him, where Fred and McTominay, they've played brilliant for Fred and McTominay.
Yeah.
But Pogba and other players that, you know, could be available. Imagine we had a De Bruyne in this United side. The balls that Greenwood and Martial and Rashford would be living on, you know, they'd probably be, you know, over 40, 45 goals between the three of them already, I think. That's what I think we lack, is that real magician that you got. He's going to take hold of a game, and that's going to happen. You know, Pogba is that guy. He really is that guy. But when he's not been available for 3 months, he ain't that guy, is he?
Yeah, true.
And that's where I see United's biggest issue is just not having. And you know, and now McTominay's injured.
Yeah.
Are we just going to crumble?
Nah, he seems to be doing well at the moment. But like I said, I'm enjoying this. This moment in time, you know, seeing United. But saying that, they're doing all right, to be fair, but I'm just like seeing Liverpool on top for once. United.
It's been a frankly ridiculous season for you so far, considering that you haven't been. I think it's fair to say you haven't been, 19 wins and a draw and no defeats. I don't think you've been that good, but this that's
is
what you've got.
But the thing is, this is what United, when Fergie was a manager, this is what United used to do all the time. It was so frustrating that I was hating on you. Everyone was hating on United and United fans. But now the roles have kind of changed. Obviously, not to that extent, because you absolutely dominated back in the day. But now everyone's hating on Liverpool, and I see why. I used to be that guy. So it's nice to see now, especially we're not playing well, but we're still getting them 1-0 victories. It's like at Spurs, we're losing like 1-0 after a couple of minutes, come back and 1-1 at Anfield. It's class. It's good to see, and it's that hate from everyone. It gives you that energy. It just boosts you and just makes you smile. Like my mates always like message me. One of my mates yesterday sent me on Instagram. He sent me a post, and he tried. It showed Mane, Salah, and Firmino. Then it showed Mason Greenwood, Martial, and Rashford. I think they scored 4 more goals in a certain amount of games. He said, we'd never swap our 3 for your 3. And I was just laughing. I said, listen, that 3 has definitely got potential. You know, it could be world-class if they all stick together, you know, and play a lot of time. But I said, it's embarrassing for you to ever compare them 3. I said, obviously, these guys have been playing, like, in the Champions League, the Premier League, the World Club Challenge. They won the Cup. And I said, y'all guys have been playing like championship standard Europe teams in Europa League and stuff. Obviously, they're going to score more goals. But as I was saying, we're doing class, and you know, I'm loving every moment of it.
Humour me. What if you get picked apart? I've seen many good teams have a one hit. Do you think the board's the kind of board that could
what
resist?
Do you mean, what do you mean by picked apart?
So let's say Real Madrid come in for Van Dijk and smack 200. What if City smack 200 million on the table for Van Dijk? Because they're flapping, aren't they, at the minute? Something they'd do.
Listen, if Van Dijk wanted to go to City, he had the opportunity to go before he came to Liverpool. So there's a reason why he didn't go. I don't think any English club would be able to...
Shit just sits there like that.
I don't think any English club would be able to get any Liverpool player. And I think that Spanish league and the Spanish teams, they're kind of losing that power they had. And people are seeing now, like, what happens to players when they go there. Like, Coutinho, obviously, he's doing well now at Bayern Munich, but they shipped him out after, like, 18 months or so. And Klopp told him, he said, you go, you'll just be another player. You stay here, they'll build a statue of you. So he decided, nah, he wants to go, which is fair enough. Everyone has their dreams and stuff, you know. He's not a local lad. He's come from, obviously, Brazil, and probably sees Real Madrid and Barcelona's a pinnacle, so he's gone. And he's from day dot, he struggled to fit in. You know, Messi's the talisman there, where he was a talisman at Liverpool. So they'll have seen that, and the grass ain't greener. And a lot of players, I think they go there to potentially win the Ballon d'Or and stuff like that. But we've seen
there's a massive favouritism for players for winning the Ballon d'Or.
Of course, he's from Real Madrid and Barcelona. But we've seen now how close Virgil van Dijk came. So you could do everything here. You just have to, you know, work hard and, you know, try to be as successful as you can. And I think, like, it's kind of changing now. Even that the Spanish league, it's not as appealing anymore. It's, you know, it's slow. It's still. I seen an article the other day, even Freddie de Jong's saying, like, it's not as intense as the Premier League. It's it's not as good.
He's not settled in very well, is he?
No, that's what
I thought
I'm
he was absolutely made for them as well.
Yeah.
I thought that just makes so much sense. That's a well-worn path, isn't it? Ajax to Barcelona.
Yeah, but if Man City was in for him as well, he maybe chose the wrong one. But, you know, so is life. You have to make these decisions. Who's saying that he won't have a cracking year and settle in next year? But
So you didn't humour me. You don't think they're getting picked up?
No, I don't think
not
so.
Not even any risk of it whatsoever. Why would Ronaldo leave United? You know, he's just won a Ballon d'Or and then boom, Real Madrid.
Yeah, I could probably see maybe Salah going, but I can't see anyone else leaving. I'm looking at the team now. I just couldn't see anyone else.
Instead of saying like that then, if let's say two got picked up, maybe Alisson, Juve come and grab him, and maybe Mane, Barcelona come and grab him or someone like that. Do you think you could survive that?
Or do you think I think we're on such a high at the moment, especially the new kit deal, you know, being world champions, Premier League champions.
Not yet.
We're going to be...
I would even go back to this article from this guy from IFAB, because if he's saying that's illegal, then I think the only thing that's worth doing now is like just... I don't know who's top. I mean, I've not even checked, but let's just like wipe out all of the results so far and start again. What do you reckon? Should we do that?
Why would you want to do that?
Because it's clearly illegal.
But I think we're so high up, like we won't just let these players go. But if we were to, we'd have a backup plan. We'd have a replacement plan for these players, because Klopp signed, I think it's till 2024, and most of these players anyway. Like you mentioned the top players like Mane, Salah, Alisson, Van Dijk. They'll be in the 30s by that time, so obviously the recruitment's been great.
You need to pull that recruitment back.
Yeah, these recruitment guys aren't fools. They'll be looking at the next Van Dijk, the next Alisson. It might be a 15-year-old they've already identified, and they're waiting 4 or 5 years to pick him up or to see how he develops, or a first teamer who's just turned 21. So they've already probably, well, a club like Liverpool, as big as in stature, they'll have identified who they're going to replace him with anyway. So, you know, I'm not afraid of that, and I don't think Liverpool fans are.
Well, 2008, United won the Premier League and the European Cup. Obviously, we won 3 in a row at that time. We've got Fergie. The team was sensational, Joe, from Evra to Rio to Vidic. We've got Rooney, Cross. Ronaldo. Once Ronaldo went, obviously, it's a different situation with your board. We've got the Glazers to contend with, and that's obviously a big issue for
that's
us.
That's good.
But the Glazers clearly didn't reinvest when we lost Ronaldo. If they'd have done whatever recruitment we'd got that got us there, Joe, that identified Rio and Ronaldo and Rooney and even Michael Carrick and players of that ilk or Rude, or Joe, we'd have continued with that level of recruitment. I'm sure we would have continued, but I don't think anyone would have looked at that team in 08, looking at the ages relatively of some of the players, and gone, this is the last time you're going to win a Champions League with this team. You would have gone, nah.
Same with Liverpool when they changed to the Premier League. No one would have said, oh, it's going to take all these decades for Liverpool to win another Premier League. No one would have said that. But like going back to the owners, like we had like Gillette and Hicks, these American owners, never there. They don't really care. It's not like someone local or someone like heavily invested in.
But even
the
new lot, the FSG lot, they run the Red Sox and they run.
They come there heavily involved. You know, they've got Jürgen's got the backing of them and everything. So you know, their vision is the same as the coaches. Mm. They're not doing up stuff off their own back like our old owners were. They just cared about making a profit and making money, where they actually care. They're trying to identify like young youth players and, you know, to come through and stuff like that. So they're involved.
I'll never give Liverpool any fucking credit if I can, but I will say the recruitment over the last few years has been almost flawless. Yeah,
and it wouldn't happen without the owners. The owners have backed that. So all you can say is, you know, if the owners are backing the coach and they see the same vision as the coach, there's no reason why any club or any organisation can't move forward. And with United, I just don't see that. You kind of got that with Mourinho as well. Like the one, he's identifying players, but not looking. They want to sign maybe a different option or a cheaper option or someone from over there for some reason. So he kind of hasn't got the backing of the full backing of the board, and when that's not there, it's kind of a
It's the same with City. That you look at what they're doing as a football club, the facility upgrades that they've made, and all of the stuff that they identified. mostly prior to Pep, actually, as well, because his signings, 31 players he's signed, yeah, not many have been that massive a success, really. Yeah. And when you look at Otamendi, Nolito, and Zinchenko, it's been a bit of a mixed bag.
I think Zinchenko is good. I think it really, obviously, he came as an attacking midfielder, left back. I think he's class, me.
I mean, that's the thing with fullbacks nowadays. You're seeing a lot of them basically be, look at Trent. Trent probably not a defender 15 years ago. He's probably a right winger, isn't he?
Yeah, I've heard he was in the academy, he was a centre midfielder.
Really?
Yeah, but you could see that. I reckon you could see that with his balls, his vision and stuff like that. And you know, it's good. Not every kid who's come through the academy who's a certain position is going to, if they eventually make it first team, which is going to be tough, he's going to be that position. But
I think Ashley Cole, I think, was a centre forward.
Was there? He was for Arsenal. I remember that. I thought he said Ashley Young then, but yeah, Ashley Cole. There's a number of players like Gareth Bale, who's a left back.
He went, I think it was 26 games or something at left back, but then he'd played for Spurs and he hadn't won.
They never won when he was at left. That's what I'm saying. So, you know, they've got attributes for different positions. It's just about the coach finding that or getting that out of him. So it's kind of lucky that... for the coaches at that time who moved him into that position.
Right, you got a testimonial coming up, haven't you?
Yes.
Does that make you feel old?
I'm 31 years old, so I am kind of old and coming to the back end of my career. But
when did rugby league become such a teenager's game? Because it wasn't a few years ago, but it seems like there's so many really young lads making debuts.
It always seems like that when you're old. I reckon it was like that when I was coming through. There was a lot of young lads around the same age as me.
But my mate Chris Tickle was on the bench for Warrington at 16, actually, I guess.
16,
yeah.
Well, I was doing at 16.
Like, what the fuck?
I was still working at 16. I didn't have a clue about rugby, but it's just one of them things that I took a risk in kind of playing rugby. Quit my jobs and stuff like that. Went on the dole because I wasn't getting paid and went training with the academy.
Which junior club was
that? I played junior rugby from the age of 8 till 12. I was at Deaton Juniors, and then I quit and I played football from. I played football in between anyway, but I played football until I was about 18. I played semi-pro a bit from the age of 16. Obviously, it won't pay the bill. I think I got played about 4 first-team games for Emily. We were like £12 a time and stuff like that. So I was working at the same time. Then I couldn't juggle the football and the work, so I just stuck with my warehouse job. And then I just kind of bumped into one of the academy players, Leroy Kudjo, at the time at Huddersfield Giants. He said, "Oh, you're looking kind of big and stuff. Why don't you come down and train?"
What the fuck?
That's how I got back into it. I said, "You know what? I'm gonna come down," and you know, I quite enjoyed it. But it was.
What position was you playing in football?
I was a centre back or a right back, but for the first team I was right back. But for the under 19s, I was a centre back. I'm always small.
You must have put some timber on to once you started playing league. Then you can't be a 15.
Yeah, that's the thing. When I was started training with the academy for a couple of months, I was like losing weight because I was working nights as well in the warehouse, and I was losing weight. So the season finished. I just said to my mum, "You know what? I'm going to just put all my eggs in one basket. I'm just going to give it a go." I was 18 at the time, so I'm going to quit my job. Said you'll have no money. I said I could just, like, claim job seekers. So I went getting £40 every 2 weeks. Smashed it in pre-season. Played a couple of games, and then the first team conditioner. He was at the academy conditioner as well. The watchman play against St. Helens. We was a curtain raiser. I think we won that game at St. Helens. I scored 2. He brought me in to the gym the day after recovering. He said, "Do you work, you?" And I'm like, "Nah." I said, "I quit my job a couple of months ago just to give rugby a try." He said, "How about coming to the first team and being full time?" I went, "Yeah." I went,
"How old was that then? Just over a pre-season?"
So basically, from when I started to that point, it was probably about 6 or 7 months. So I had a good pre-season because I quit my job, and I was always just dedicated on rugby. I was broke as hell, though. Like, all my mates would be going out on the weekend, like, "Oh, Jermaine, are you coming out?" Like, "Oh, fucking no money. So I managed to sign a contract to Huddersfield.
How much was that contract?
It was £3,000 a year, so £250 a week. full-time.
A month?
Yeah, £250 a month.
A month.
So
fucking
two lads from, I'll give them a mention, Steve Snitch and Paul Jackson, they used to travel from Leeds and pick me up on the way to, and I used to quickly get washed and changed so they could bring me back home. I didn't have a penny to my name, really, but, you know, I stuck stuck at it, worked hard, and you know, eventually I had a couple of loan moves where I learnt my trade and stuff like that. Yeah, I went to Batley, then Barrow, and then eventually made my first team debut against Bradford Bulls away, scored two, and then I haven't looked back since. I think made my debut in 2010, and I've been not had the worst career, but I've had a decent career. You know, I won nothing. Well, I won a league leaders in 2013 with Huddersfield, won a couple of test series with England against New Zealand, got to a World Cup final, lost.
Yeah, let's talk about the World Cup, because you was one of the players of the tournament, weren't you? You come second in the Golden Boot.
Yeah, came second in the Golden Boot. It was a good tournament for me. I think probably my best rugby to date, really. I always remember this, like they announced the squad obviously at the end of the season 2017. I think we had a shit season with Huddersfield. I'm not joking. I've not received so much hate in my life. Like obviously I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. People was like, they was inboxing me saying, how have you got into this team? You shit. And I just like click on the profile. It'd be some fat guy with no teeth. I'm like. How can you tell me that I'm
That's
shit? I don't know where they were from, but I'm not joking. I must have had about 12 inboxes, and then obviously where England released the team names, the team players, and the names and etc. and all that. Like underneath, I'd read the comments like McGilvray's garbage, shit. I can name 10 better wingers. I'm like, oh god. I said they don't even. I said no
you
never nation.
Don't even, to
any of it. Nah, I don't. I'll come back to that. But obviously, like me, I've come like from 16 years old. I've worked and stuff like that, so I know what real life is. I find it so easy to separate rugby. So like when I finish training and stuff, rugby's done. I can separate rugby from real life. Whereas, like if you're a footballer where you've been in an academy system from like 8 going up to 16, you've made it first team. And this and that. That's all you've known. You've not really known the real life. So when they get the hit, it can send them either way. It can send them downward and negative. Well, that, I think that's one of the bad things about sport when you get that hit. But me, I couldn't care less. I've worked so hard to get where I am. So no guy with a belly out here and no teeth could tell me, oh, you don't deserve it. But yeah, so. I got all that hate, you know, it kind of made me laugh. Like my friends had screenshot it as well, and like send me some stuff.
I can imagine the WhatsApps have been brutal. Yeah, and
so
shit like that.
So I like fuck it. I was like, these are my own fans. So there was one. So I played against Australia. Well, I got picked for Australia, the first game of the World Cup, the opening game. And like, still getting they announced the team on social media, still getting a little bit of hate. Then I played really good. You know, I scored the opening try. We lost in the end. I think we lost by about 12, but it was really sad. There was only try in it until like the last 2 minutes or something like that. Then, I liked about 3 or 4 the things. And there was one to me, oh, I'm so sorry, you had a blinder today. And I went, and I just wrote back. I said, just keep that same energy you were giving me the other day. Honestly, it inspired me. And they went, oh, we're so sorry. I went, you know what, it doesn't matter. But you know what, the rest of the tournament, I had a decent tournament. I nearly got banned for the tournament for biting, which he got. Turned down, which he basically put me in a chokehold and he put his arm around my mouth, and you know, obviously he's going to have teeth marks.
Was it Tonga, that was it?
No, Lebanon.
Yeah,
so I never said that my teeth marks weren't on him. Obviously they were, but if you could have choked me across my mouth and in a high intensity game, and my nose as well, so what am I going to do? So I got left for that. We made it to the final. We had a great time, like on and off
Tonga
the field.
The
Tonga in the semi. Oh God, that was the best atmosphere I've ever been a part of in any sport. I've been to loads of stadiums. There might have been baseball games, the lot. That game there, like I couldn't speak to the person next to me. They couldn't hear me. It was that loud. The ground felt like it was shaking. It was so good.
Tonga and all, they're just a different human as well, aren't they? They're so fucking hard.
They're all like 20 stone, but fit, fast, agile, skillful. You know, they're made for rugby. All of them, class
it
players.
It looked like a brutally hard. Every tackle looked like like the first tackle after a penalty, didn't he? Yeah. Just like, oh.
I actually snapped my LCL, so the ligaments on the outside of my knee in that game. One of the players, I got tackled and someone landed on me. So after the game, when we won, like my knee kept on hyperextending. I like to the physio, I went, something's not right here. They said, oh, you just probably tweaked something. I said, we'll strap it for the final. So I got it strapped, played the final. We lost 6-0 to Australia in the final. It was a brutal game. Like, I have zero calves. I was getting like cramping my calves. The bottom of my foot were twisting and it was just stuck there because it was just cramping up. It was so tough, you know.
What does that feel like? You're fucking grown up wanting to be a professional athlete. Mm. You're in a World Cup fucking final against Australia. We all know, you know, England have never won a World Cup. So the chances of that happening was, well, at least you're there.
Yeah.
Like, what was the belief like that you could actually get it done?
It was there. Like, we all believed that we could do it. No one believed we could even make the final. Like, no one believed in that team, full stop. But we got there. We worked so hard. You know, the bond was unreal. Mm. It felt like a club team. Like, I say to anyone now, like, when they ask me about it, I was like, that's honestly the best time I've had in rugby, like on and off the field. The staff, the organisation, they got it absolutely perfect. That World Cup, we had absolutely everything. We didn't have to ask for anything, so we could not blame our performances or training on anyone or anything because we had absolutely everything.
And, you know, better on the night with
it showed. You know, like they've been blowing teams away and stuff like that. To lose 6-0 was heartbreaking.
It was hard watching it. I can't imagine the emotions of playing
it was so tough. Like when the final whistle went, no one celebrated. Everyone would just fell to the floor. Even they fell to the floor. We fell to the floor. We gave absolutely everything, and obviously it wasn't good enough, and it just wasn't meant to be. But you can't fault anyone's effort in the team, in the whole entire squad. Everyone played the part, the coaches, the staff around, the players, everyone played the part. It was just on the night, one bit of quality in the first half from them. And, you know, we lost the World Cup final, you know, came so close. But I had an amazing time, like friends for life, an experience for a lifetime. It's probably one of them, obviously I appreciate it now, but When I retire, I really appreciate it. I'll really look back. I'm not one to really dwell on things, whether that be good, bad. I like to move on. I save my stuff like medals and, you know, stuff, pictures and shirts and stuff. I save all that. It's probably one when I finish in like in 5-6 years time, and I'll look back and say, flipping hell, I was 16 years old working in a warehouse. Went on the door when I was 18. And I made it as a professional rugby league player. I played for my country. I played for Great Britain. Obviously, I didn't have the greatest time with Great Britain, but I've done that. You know, and I quit rugby when I was 12 years old. I wanted to play football. I wanted to be a footballer. Obviously, I was never going to make it as a professional, but I love football. I still do to this day. But yeah, it's to come from where what I've done and how I started is. You know, it's been a journey, and it's, you know, I'm really proud of what I've done. No matter, that's why when I say to you, when people say, "Oh, you're not deserving," how is he in that squad? It doesn't affect me. How can it affect me when I know how hard I've worked? You know, I remember one time in the season before I made my debut, it was a Mad Monday. So Mad Monday is obviously when the season finishes. Everyone goes out on the piss and stuff like that. I drove past all the team. They was in the pub were there and the gym were there. I drove past all of them. I was in the gym on Mad Monday, and I did the preseason that Christmas Eve and Christmas. Yeah, Greg Brown saw for conditioner. I lived with him. We trained the Christmas Eve. We trained the Christmas Day. We trained not. Not because of everyone else doing it, it's because I want to make it. And obviously he was a big influence because I had to move with him when I first signed my deal, just to keep me out of trouble where I'm from and stuff like that. But you know, I wanted it so bad, and you know, I don't think I've done too bad.
Well, that's the difference, isn't it? Anytime you hear about someone that goes that extra mile, you very rarely hear of it not working. Mm. You always hear of like, yeah, I, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, you train with weights on and do extra sessions and have to get told, fucking get in and stop fucking about. And every time I hear that about someone, I go, of course it did.
Yeah, anyone who's worked hard, they've never said, oh, I wish I didn't work hard.
Yeah.
But people who haven't worked hard, or anyone who hasn't worked hard, always say, I wish I'd have worked. Look how many failed footballers there would have been, not just football, sports people.
Football especially.
You hear about people, they're the next best thing, but they went, when they were 16, they started going on the piss, they started smoking, they didn't turn up to training, and they're in the mid-20s now, probably working a warehouse job or in an office and thinking, fucking hell, if I just sacrifice 2 years of my life and just see if I could actually do it. People regret that, but no one ever says, I worked my fucking socks off all my life. I wish I didn't do that. No one says that because it's not a thing. It's as easy as that, but it's not easy. It is hard. It is tough. But, you know, the only reason I say it to people anyway, the only reason why I wanted to be a rugby league player or just a sportsman is just so I had a nice life. I'd fuck all, like working a warehouse job. Basically, like, I think it was like, I don't know, maybe about 800 a month or something like that. But I go out every weekend with my mates, and I'm thinking, I'm fucking like coming up to 18 now. Like, what have I got to show for it? Am I going to do this for the rest of my life? Mm. So imagine if I was a footballer or a rugby player, be able to buy an house, you know, settle down, maybe have a family. But you can't do that on fucking £800 a month. One person can't survive on that. So, but if you're on a lot more than that, and you invest it right, when you do finish playing, you could have what you want. Like, everyone calls me, I'm known as a tight cunt. Everyone will tell you, oh, no, this, oh, he's a tight cunt. Is this and that? Yeah, but the thing is, what I was saying, because when I've had nothing, so what I do now is just, I save everything I get. So when I do finish playing, you know, I could live that go on holiday twice a year. And
I've seen you
like
talk
that.
About what you're going to do when you finish. But what are you going to do when you finish? Have you got an eye on it yet? Or
just... I'm not sure. I've got a couple of houses. A few houses, so I might, you know, start doing that full time. I won't mind doing something with the academy at Huddersfield, but obviously you never know who's a part of the staff at that time and stuff like that. But I'm really unsure because I don't know whether I want to stay in rugby or not. It's just one of them things. But I just know I've got 4 years left at Huddersfield, and whatever I want to decide to do, I really would like to start sometime soon. That transition when I do leave rugby, obviously it won't be as bad as people who've been involved in rugby all the lives, but it's been a large chunk of my life. But I do know what the real world is. Rugby league, football, sport in general, that is not real life. The person who's the janitor at the school, person working in 9-to-5, people on the bus, that's real life. So I do know what that is, but obviously, because I've been a part of this for the last 12 years now, I just want to make that transition smoother. If I could start something while I'm playing, then move into it once I finish.
So your testimonial's in 2 weeks?
Yeah, a week on Sunday.
Why playing in Halifax?
It's the Infirmary Cup. It's probably the first time I ever played it against it. Because what we used to do back in the day, we used to have a pre-season friendly against Halifax.
Right.
It used to be basically the top academy players and the fringe first team players would play for a cup called the Infirmary Cup. We used to play them every year, but it hasn't happened for the last 6 or 7 years. So I'm bringing that back. And it's we're local, so it's like if I invited Wigan to come over, for instance, and it started pissing it down, and the fans came out the door and thought, you know what, I don't fancy this. Whereas Halifax is literally 10 minutes away. So come rain, sun, or whatever, they're gonna hopefully turn up in numbers. But
I think I checked before. I think we play on a Saturday, so I'm gonna try and go. We play Norwich on a Saturday. Yeah, so I'm hoping to come down. So if you want to come down with us, and we're just gonna heckle him for being a fucking scouser. if you're in for that, I'll throw a link to go and get tickets in the description. But Jerry, thanks very much. It's been fucking epic. Go check out his. If you're in the Northwest or you're in anywhere near Huddersfield, definitely check that out. That's on Sunday the 12th of January.
Yeah, 3 p.m. kickoff.
There you go. And like I said, just heckling for being a fucking local fan. Right, we are brought to you by The Athletic as usual. Go and check the link out in the description if you'd like to sign up. You can get 50% off and a month's free trial. That is theathletic.co.uk/Housen. theathletic.co.uk/Housen. See you in the next one.